Thank you all for coming. This is glad that you all have stuck around for my talk, because this is the sort of the black box of what happens to your proposal once you send it off, what happens to it next. And we really feel that once you get a little bit better understanding of what are the next steps that your proposal goes through, by gaining this sort of perspective, it will help you in the future to prepare a more competitive proposal. So the overview of the entire competitive grant proposal process can be broken into about three categories. We have the application process, which is left up to you, the applicants. The review process, which begins after that submit button is clicked on grants.gov, and we do an administrative review for ensuring that your proposal meets all the specific requirements. And then we have the peer review process, which we invite people in to review your proposals based on their scientific merit. And then if you're one of the lucky few who have prepared a very competitive, high-quality proposal, you're involved in the award administration process. So the application process, as we've mentioned, begins with our solicitation, the request for applications. I know some people have mentioned it as the RFP, the request for proposals. We term it the request for applications, or the RFA. This is posted on our website at www.csrees.usda.gov, and you can click in this highlighted area that I have on here, our funding opportunities database, where you can search through all of our funding opportunities that are available by topic area, alphabetically, or by due date, depending on your area of expertise. So the project directors, that's you, the applicants, will read this RFA very thoroughly to develop your proposal so that it is in compliance with our specific program goals and priorities. And we also have contained within the RFA very specific guidelines that we expect you to follow, addressing these goals and priorities or certain requirements for these programs, and also more agency-wide requirements on the submission process. Applying through grants.gov is now a requirement by our agency, submitting your applications electronically. So ensuring that you meet all these requirements so that your proposal isn't rejected prior to the actual review by your peers. And also paying particular attention to our published deadlines. We know that there is sometimes very little time to prepare your proposal, so paying attention to those deadlines is very important, because we do not allow them, we don't allow proposals after our deadlines. So once again, we feel that it's really important for you to understand this process specific to your program that you're applying to. It can help you prepare a more competitive proposal, understanding what your reviewers see, what the program expects, and things like that. We work really hard at our agency to ensure that this review process is designed to be very fair, effective, and unbiased. So with that, we institute a peer-reviewed competitive process in which your proposal, every single proposal in the competitive process, is reviewed by peers and other experts. We ask them to either provide a written review, as in such our ad hoc external reviewers, or both written and verbal evaluations, as our peer panel members participate in. And understanding these reviewers and what our expectations of them is will help you kind of get some insight into how your reviewers are looking at your proposals and how you can sort of write your proposals also for the reviewers. So first and foremost, are the reviewers, the expectations of our reviewers and the evaluation factors that we provide to them. This is the most important thing in the proposal review process, and it can be dependent by program. So whether you're applying to one of our Section 406 programs, like Debbie had talked about earlier, like the Integrated Organic Program, pay particular attention to the evaluation criteria there in that program as compared to something like the National Research Initiative. Make sure you understand each of the evaluation criteria before you write the proposal. You know, make sure you address each and every point that is brought up in these evaluation criteria, because those reviewers are looking at each one of those evaluation criteria and rating your proposal on those items. And as I mentioned, all evaluation criteria are stated very specifically in every RFA. And I think Diana might mention this, but I'll go ahead and bring it up again, is within the NRI, we have multiple evaluation criteria. We have many different project types, so it's very important that you are addressing the correct evaluation criteria. We have specific evaluation criteria for integrated projects within the NRI, so make sure you pull those out of the RFA and address those. So now on to the review process, and we have quite a few areas that I want to go over is the role of the national program leader and the panel manager, the ground rules that we sort of set for the review process. Again, I'll talk about the evaluation criteria, and also our guidelines for confidentiality and conflicts of interest. So to run a program every year, we hire on a member from the scientific area that this program is involved to act as our panel manager. They become a full part-time USDA employee for 1 to 2 years. They work alongside the national program leader to conduct the review process for that program. Things that they'll be responsible with are selecting panelists, assigning reviews to the reviewers. They'll chair the panel meeting, and they'll also help decide some of the budget decisions on when we award proposals. So in the beginning of a panel, or once applications are received, the national program leader and the panel manager will go through and study all of the proposals to get an understanding of the diversity of the proposals that are sent in to ensure that they can cover the expertise required to review the proposals. They will assign the proposals for peer review. All of our proposals are assigned to 3 reviewers or 3 panelists. We have a primary, secondary, and tertiary panelists. And sometimes we'll even add a reader to a proposal. This person is not necessarily required to write a review. However, they do participate in the discussion during the panel review. And then we can assign on an as-needed basis up to 4 external ad hoc reviewers to also provide any additional expertise that could be needed that maybe isn't quite there on our panel. So going back to recruiting of the panel members, we really look to ensure that we have enough expertise and experience to cover the entire portfolio of applications that are submitted to the program. We ensure also that we have diverse representation on our panels as well. And then, again, the national program leader and the panel manager will then conduct the panel, the review panel. So some of the post-panel responsibilities, again, are award administration. They also provide feedback and consultation to those proposals that were not accepted for an award. They get a lot of feedback by disgruntled, probably, applicants trying to get some more information. We provide some constructive feedback on what they can do to improve their proposal, try to explain maybe some of the points that weren't clearly articulated in some of the reviews or in the panel summary. And we also work really hard to report success stories and highlights from the applications that we have funded. And we also work really hard towards program education and promotion as what we're trying to do here today as well. For panel member selection, we look for panelists that are very active in research, education, or extension. And as I'd mentioned, we try to balance our panels for diversity across disciplines, geographically, institution types, whether that be 1862 institutions, 1994, 1890 institutions. We look for federal employees as well as private industry representatives. We look for panelists to represent all professional ranks, anybody from an assistant professor to a full professor. And we make sure that we have proper representation of women and minorities on our panels as well. Another thing we look for is continuity across our panels. I know we had a discussion a little bit earlier today about maybe the next panel, if you resubmit your proposal, you won't have the same people on the panel. But that isn't always necessarily true. We like to ensure that we have people on panel that are experienced in the review process, and also to have carry over some of that continuity from panel to panel to remember what types of proposals were submitted the previous year. And also it's nice to have someone review the proposal again that reviewed it the year before, and they're really truly the judge to see how much that proposal has improved by addressing the previous reviews from the year before. So here is our one plug for you all. Actually, I shouldn't say one. I think Diana does it as well. But to become a reviewer for our agency, you would just need to simply send an email to this address that we've listed here with your contact information and your areas of expertise. This will put you into our reviewer database is what we consider it. Set you up so that if we are interested in your expertise, possibly as an ad hoc reviewer, or possibly in the future as a panel member. This you can gain great experience in understanding the review process even deeper than what I can explain to you here. If you're a new investigator, to understand the process and get an insight into the breadth of proposals that are submitted into a particular program that you have expertise, you can gain some really great insight by putting your name into this database. So on to the role of the panelist. Panelists can be expected to review from anywhere from 15 to 20 proposals. We expect them to provide constructive, unbiased evaluation of the proposals that they're given. Also to protect the confidentiality of the information that is provided in each of the proposals. And we also expect them to pay particular attention to conflicts of interest. So onto some of these ground rules into a little bit more detail. First is confidentiality. We pay particular attention to the identity of each of our applicants into the program and the content of their proposals. Anything that is reviewed or discussed in panel stays in panel. It doesn't leave the room at any time. We protect the reviewer's identity as well, and the reviews that they provide, the scores, any of the information, the items that they discuss. We do, as we mentioned before, give the reviews back to the applicants for their information. If they are declined, they can take that information and put that information into their resubmission if they choose to resubmit. And also any of the items that are discussed during panel are also kept confidential. So conflicts of interest are something that can really play a big role in how we conduct panel. People that are considered in conflict with a proposal are those individuals that have been an advisor or advisee of the applicant. Any collaborations or co-authors with up to 4 years of time are also in conflict with conflict of the review of the proposal. Any institutional affiliations, and anyone who stands to materially profit from an award decision. So when I mentioned that if someone is in conflict with a proposal, they aren't necessarily in conflict with the proposal itself, it's just with the review of that proposal. So during that time, they're not asked, of course, to review the proposal, and when the proposal is reviewed during panel, we ask them to leave the room during that time. They're physically not present in the room during the entire discussion of the proposal and of the ranking of that proposal as well. Conflicts of interest apply to the national program leader, the panel manager, panelists, and all ad hoc reviewers. And again, as I had mentioned previously, they don't participate in any aspect of the evaluation. Anything dealing with budget, scope, duration, no portion of the proposal are they involved in. So moving on to evaluation criteria, I mentioned this is a very important part of the review process, not only for the applicant, but for the peer review panelists as well. I mentioned that it's always described in the request for applications, It differs across programs, and it can also differ, as I mentioned, within a program, like the National Research Initiative. It differs by project type. And this is what the reviewers use to evaluate each and every proposal. And another note is stated criteria are given equal weight unless it's otherwise noted in the RFA. So if we have three main evaluation criteria for a proposal type, it's 33% weight given to each of those categories. So here's an example of the National Research Initiative's evaluation criteria for integrated projects. The three areas that we look at are the merit of the application, the qualifications of the project personnel, and project relevance. To go in a little bit more detail, we look for merit of application. We look at the project objectives, outcomes, and ensure that they're clearly described, they're adequate and appropriate for the project. We look at the approach and to ensure that it's innovative, original, and feasible for the proposed time or for the objectives outlined. And we want to ensure that the expected results and outcomes are stated, measurable, and achievable. And I just want to point out that, again, these evaluation criteria that I'm going over are stated in the RFA, and actually, if you've received your CD, a file is located on there with these same evaluation criteria. So on to more things with merit of the application. The research should fill knowledge gaps. And these things probably sound familiar, as Debbie had sort of discussed them earlier. The education should strengthen institutional capacity, and extension should lead to measurable changes. Project personnel, things we look for are that the personnel have sufficient expertise and their roles are clearly defined. There's some evidence of institutional capacity to be able to carry out the project. Clearly articulated management plan to ensure that we can see that the project has been well thought out and the management is going to be sufficient. And that the budget allocates sufficient resources. As Debbie had mentioned, no more than two-thirds of the budget can be allocated to one component of the integrated project. Relevance for the project, that it addresses the stated program priority in the program. And this is one thing I'd like to point out for the National Research Initiative this year is we're paying very particular attention that you specifically address one of the stated program priorities. We want to make sure that the functions are integrated and necessary. If there's a research component on the project and clearly it doesn't need to be there, if you just sort of added it on to think that it was necessary to have the third component, it might not give you quite as much weight as if you had really played out your project and only had the components that were necessary for it to be functionable. That you clearly address your stakeholder needs. We heard from some of our presenters today that they hadn't clearly done that, and that was something that they came back with on their resubmission, was showing that the stakeholders had some buy-in to their project. And also to make sure that the stakeholders actually play an active role in the project with the outcomes and the communication with their final audience. We also want to ensure that there is an evaluation plan in place, and for extension and education activities, that the products will sustain education and extension functions beyond the project, and the curriculum also shares information based on knowledge and conclusions from a broad range of research initiatives. So these are just some examples. They're more detailed in the actual evaluation criteria in the RFA. This is something that we talk about this question is about the evaluation plan of a proposal and what is that. The evaluation plan would go back to evaluating your project to ensure that you're meeting your desired outcomes and objectives. So this would be your measurable outcomes and impacts, things like that. So an evaluation plan, what you're going to do to go back to ensure that you're accomplishing your goals and objectives. Does that answer your question? So the review process. The reviewers prepare written reviews. These are our peer review panelists and our ad hoc reviewers. They all write written reviews. They use these evaluation criteria. We ask them to address the strengths and the weaknesses of the proposal and also to make suggestions for improvement. They then provide a summary rating from excellent to very good, good, fair, and poor. One thing I want to mention is that our project types are reviewed and ranked separately. For example, if a project, say within the National Research Initiative, solicits for research proposals and integrated proposals, they will not be reviewed side by side. We will review all of the research proposals and rank them separately, and then we will review all of the integrated proposals and rank them separately. So we're not comparing apples and oranges in these situations. So once we get into panel, what happens? We ask the primary reviewer to summarize the proposal. They talk about the objectives, and then they will repeat kind of the strengths and the weaknesses that they observed. And then the secondary and the tertiary will provide their evaluations in that order. When used, someone will then summarize the ad hoc reviews, and then the ratings that they give, the excellent to poor, are given to all panelists to determine if there is a consensus, except those individuals with a COI, they do not see these ratings. Then panel discussion ensues, so we have a lot of discussion back and forth on if there's a lot of agreement about the proposal, if there's some discrepancies, a lot of discussion ensues. Not only those people who were assigned to the panel necessarily provide comment. We ask all panelists who are not in conflict to participate in the panel discussion. Once there is a consensus, then the proposal is ranked on the wall in one of five categories: outstanding, high priority, medium priority, low priority, and do not fund. We have one person then provide a panel summary to give an overview of the discussion that occurred in panel. Many panels will then re-rank proposals on the final day of panel. They revisit each of the categories and the proposals that are in each area, and proposals can actually make quite a jump. Panelists will go back and look at proposals that they've maybe felt that maybe didn't get enough discussion, or they've thought about a proposal compared to another, and they can move up and down in these categories at this time. Proposals are then given a numerical ranking. We usually only go through about the top 25% of proposals and give a ranking of 1 through whatever. One thing I want to point out is if you have submitted your application and you have not received any type of a notification within 4 weeks of your deadline date, it's very important that you contact the national program leader for that program to ensure that we have received your proposal and that it has been accepted into the program. If you don't do this, there could be a possibility that we've never received it, and you might assume it's going through the proposal process, the review process, and it might not make review in that situation if you don't contact us, if you haven't received any acknowledgement. Also, it's important to keep us updated of any changes. If you are changing institution, changing your address, your phone number, especially your email address in any situation, the status of any other pending proposals, if you sent a relatively similar proposal to the National Science Foundation, we'd like to know if it's been funded or not. And also, if you've come into conflict, you believe, with any of the proposals, if you have developed any new affiliations or have published any articles, things like that, because we want to be apprised of all conflicts of interest at all times. And the most important thing, I think, for a lot of national program leaders is then just wait. Wait till we contact you. It's a very long process that we have to go through, from proposal submission until we can finally make award calls. We want to make sure that we give our reviewers sufficient time to adequately review these 15 to 20 proposals. So we don't want to pressure them into not giving you a good constructive review. So the panel summary, I briefly mentioned that this is the summary that is written to give an overview of what was discussed of your proposal during the discussion in the panel room. The panel summary just kind of gives the positive and negative aspects of the proposal, and also will give synthesis comments. These are sort of the constructive comments on what you could do to improve your proposal, any suggestions that, like going out and getting some additional documentation of stakeholder input, things along those lines. So for the lucky ones who are recommended for an award, we will place a phone call to those individuals, letting them know that they're recommended and any other documentation that is required to process the award. We will return all written reviews, the panel summary, and the relative ranking to all awardees and also those that are declined. And then, as I mentioned, there's a little bit of paperwork that you'll need to complete for your award to be finalized. For those people who are unfortunately weren't awarded, we email and or send a letter from the national program leader stating that you weren't awarded. You also get back all written reviews, the panel summary, and the relative ranking.